Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now just 20 shopping days left until Christmas Day, and I believe you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday madness all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight is my co-host, Mr. Bradford. Brad?
Greetings, holiday shoppers. We are fully in the season now.
Yes, it is December. Finally. Finally, it's December. Also joining us tonight on the show, Johnny Five, the human robot, could not be with us tonight, but we have a pinch hitter subbing in for him. Joining us live tonight from parts unknown is music expert and friend of the podcast, Libby Cudmore.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. Please stop hitting each other in the aisles. Please stop hitting each other in the aisles. It's great to be here, guys.
Great to have you.
Libby, what's going on? This is a very special occasion for a number of reasons, because you recommended the film for tonight's episode, so we thought it was only fair that we bring you on to discuss it. But also, we have a kind of a special announcement here. Libby and I are about to embark on a brand new podcasting voyage, and we want to talk about that just real
yes,
quick.
Yes, indeed.
Libby, tell the audience all about our brand new podcast.
All right. We are starting a podcast called OST Party, where Joe's love of movies and my love of music meet and have a rockin' good time. We're going to talk about movie soundtracks, and it's really, really fun and weird, and Massive Attack is on everything.
You're going to hear a lot about Massive Attack, yes. That's true.
And I can't wait to hear this podcast.
Yes, we're planning to release it the week before Christmas, so for everybody out there who's got traveling to do for the holidays, you're going to have two brand new episodes of the OST Party podcast to listen to on your travels.
Can you spoil it for me? What episodes are you doing? What movies are you doing?
Our very first two episodes, we're going to drop them at the same time. Episode one is going to be about the Kevin Smith movie Clerks.
And episode two is going to be about Batman Forever.
Oh,
one of these two movies is one of my favorite movies. Can you determine which?
I actually cannot. If you put a gun to my head, I would still think it's 50-50, because I don't know.
You're a good friend, Brad.
Thanks.
He will never tell my deepest, darkest secrets.
Well, at least until episode two.
At least until episode two.
Spoiler alert.
Shit, we well, the cat's out of the bag. Wow.
I did have a hunch. I mean, A Kiss from a Rose is just very good. That's on Batman Forever, right?
Yeah.
All right. I know a thing.
But also tonight, so because we are here to talk about movie soundtracks and music and things like that, Libby came on tonight to discuss what movie, Libby?
Adam Sandler's Eight Crazy Nights.
Oh, yes. His 2002 animated musical, which sort of straddles the line between a Christmas movie and a Hanukkah movie, kind of lands somewhere in the middle, but not really one of either.
Generic non-denominational holiday movie?
That's a good way to describe it, yeah, because it's kind of just about the holidays. And even then, not really. Like a lot of the films we cover on this podcast, it's kind of about Christmas, but not really. Libby, what fascinates you about this movie? What brought you to this lowly state in your life?
Well, I was raised Jewish. My mom converted when she married my stepdad. And so I was raised Jewish and also Presbyterian on my dad's side. So I did celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah. And I went to Binghamton University, which has a huge Jewish population. Probably about half my friends were Jewish, including my two best friends, Beth and Mike. And when this movie came out, it happened to be Hanukkah fell while we were still in school. And so Beth and a couple other friends, I don't remember who else, it might have been her ex-boyfriend Ira, who's also Jewish, we all went and saw it on the 8th night of Hanukkah. It was a little treat to ourselves. So I've got a weird soft spot for this movie because it was something we did during the holidays. And I think for a couple of years after we watched it on Hanukkah, or at least before we all left for the semester. It became a little tradition. Yeah.
That's great. See, that's great. Like, I'm glad that you have an actual holiday memory attached to this film, because I don't think either Brad or myself do. So at least somebody is you know, repping the holidays here.
Yeah.
I do recall seeing this in the theater on opening day with a couple of friends from high school. I honestly don't recall if we skipped class to go see it or not.
That's amazing. Why would you do that? How bad a class was it? We're like, let's go see an Adam Sandler movie.
Oh, let's see.
When you're in high school, you don't really need an excuse.
I yeah. guess. I skipped class to go see The Phantom Menace. My boyfriend wouldn't even kiss me during it. I mean, really. But,
That's more an indictment of The Phantom Menace, though, isn't it?
No, it's an indictment on the boyfriend, trust me.
Okay. All right. I'm just
but
trying
Star
to
Wars
help.
Is more important than a girl. No, but one of the best parts about going to a school with a really high Jewish population is if you were Jewish or had grown up practicing, you could light Hanukkah candles in your dorm, which meant you had a religious reason to light candles in your dorm year round. Ooh. So everyone was Jewish at Binghamton. We were lighting off candles like you wouldn't believe. They would actually give you could get a little menorah, so we would gather in Beth's room and do the Hanukkah blessing. It was nice.
That sounds
so
great.
So you're telling me that you use that as cover to light scented candles in your room all year round?
I'm not a basic ass bitch. I don't light scented candles. I just lit like
all right candles. All right,
yeah, I totally did. I was Wiccan on days that weren't Jewish holidays.
Here, it's not an indictment against you. I light scented candles. So
no,
I'm the basic ass bitch in this scenario. So,
and you know, I was about to like stick up for you and say that you were practicing the Christmas creeps philosophy well before we even invented it. If you're doing it all year round.
Yes.
No, I just liked having candles. They were pretty.
That's fair.
I'm sure some of them were scented, but I'm not like a big Yankee Candle person. Because those are expensive.
And especially nowadays, they come in scents that you really don't want burning in your house. Like, I don't know anybody who wants to buy a denim scented candle or a dirt scented candle. Or
like, I'm mailing you both like man. Have you heard about like man candles?
That's
like
what I'm
tobacco.
Thinking of. Yeah. Yeah.
Do they call them mandals?
God, I hope so. Joe, you're getting a bacon candle for Hanukkah. And Brad, you're getting a, how about like bourbon sweat?
Oh, I'm ready. Bring it on.
This might be an inappropriate joke, but is a bacon candle an appropriate gift for Hanukkah?
That's a good point.
Nope. That's you're not sure, so it's okay.
That's why you're giving it to a filthy Gentile like me.
Exactly.
Fair enough. Brad, what about you? Had you seen Eight Crazy Nights before?
I had seen Eight Crazy Nights when I was in high school, and the weirdest part about it is that it was one of my, like, I had a couple of friends in a crew that I ran with that went to, like, a Christian private school, and it was, like, this guy that was in the super Christian family, but he was super into this movie, and I guess it was, like, a thing of rebellion for him that he liked like Adam Sandler movies or something. I don't know. So you showed it to me once. It was fine. It was whatever. We'll get into it.
I just want to point out, I really hate that the two of you saw this in high school and I saw this in college. This makes me feel so fucking old. I can't even stand it. I quit.
It's all right.
I'm leaving. I'm walking out of the studio right now.
Oh, geez. Okay. Well, we lost her, Brad. Sorry, you're going to have to talk about this movie for the next 45 minutes because you scared Libby off. Thanks a lot, Brad.
Bring it on.
No, it is actually weird that Brad and I went to the same high school at the same time, but we were not friends at that time.
Were you not
in his crew that he ran with?
I was not in the super Christian school crew, no.
Well, I had two crews. One crew was your brother, which is how I eventually met you.
That's
and
just
one
true.
Crew was the weird, like the, I don't know, I don't want to be mean, but the sloppy seconds from church.
Okay, all right.
There were some nice people, but there was also some Anyways, okay. Less said about that, better.
That's fine. That's perfectly fine. So yeah, let's get into this film a little bit. Right off the bat, you know, Libby said it, it's Adam Sandler's Eight Crazy Nights. So this was the big Adam Sandler animated movie in 2002. And I feel like 2002 was kind of the big year for Adam Sandler. And it was kind of a tipping point for him because he had a bunch of movies out this year. Only one of them made any money. Mr. Deeds, for some reason, made a buttload of money. But there was this one and Punch Drunk Love. And I feel like there was something else, but they all kind of failed. And this, I feel like, was the one where Adam Sandler realized he could just come to work without pants and get away with it. And it kind of shows because this movie, a lot of things about this movie just feel lazy to me.
Oh my God, all of it is lazy, except the music, but we'll get into that.
The music and the animation, like everything around it that's not Adam Sandler related is fine.
Well, like, actually, I think the animation is super lazy. I think the animation, there's something about it, I think, because we're in such a cultural shift at that point where, you know, we have Pixar, we have all these great animation companies, and maybe it's just that, like, at that point, 2D animation looks lazy. It's not particularly detailed. It's just, like, kind of round, goofy shapes. It looks...
Yeah, it's a little generic and a little fluid, but...
It's kind of bargain basement Iron Giant level kind of stuff.
But not, yeah, at least Iron style. Giant was stylized.
It's like, no, absolutely.
It's funny that you say that, because I have a little story to tell you about this movie.
Oh, gosh.
The production of this movie.
I stepped right in it, didn't I?
You stepped right in the poop, and now we have to look at it.
And now the deer are going to lick it off.
Oh, God.
Sorry!
Okay, forget that. We'll put a pin in the deer licking the poop for now, and we'll come back around to it. But basically, the short version of this is that back in the late 90s, Warner Brothers really wanted to get into animation. So they put all their eggs into the basket called Quest for Camelot. They spent a buttload of money on it. It was going to be their big summer movie in 1998, and it flopped hard. So hard that the other film they were working on at the time, The Iron Giant, got $0 to promote itself with.
Jesus.
So The Iron Giant flopped, and as a result, they got rid of their entire animation studio, and a lot of those animators went off to other studios, many of whom wound up working on this film.
I'm sad now. So the saddest thing I've ever heard.
If it looks like Bargain Basement Iron Giant, that's because it literally is.
Oh my God, my heart.
Can you place this in the Sandlerverse for us? Was this this was post Happy Gilmore and post what's the one where he's like a millionaire but he has to go to elementary school or whatever?
Billy Madison.
Madison. This is post both of those, right?
Yeah, and post The Wedding Singer as well.
Okay. Mm. So
that's really the one where, like, I feel like after The Wedding Singer he was like, well, shit, I can do anything I want to now.
Yeah, Adam Sandler was big at this point, and I think part of the reason that this had a bit of cachet is that pretty much everybody at this point under the age of 45 had heard Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song. I think thanks in part to Napster and music sharing services, because that's where I was exposed to various Adam Sandler songs.
Same. I hadn't thought about that. Wow. And also because there aren't a lot of Hanukkah movies. In fact, I can't think of another one. And so...
I can think of exactly one, and it's The Hebrew Hammer.
Yeah, that was later. And that wasn't a theatrical release. That was Comedy Central.
No, exactly. Right. So not the most robust catalog Hanukkah movies.
Yeah.
But just by name recognition alone, I felt like they had a lot of leeway to work with. Because everybody was like, oh, Eight Crazy Nights. I know that song. I know Adam Sandler. He's a funny man. Let's go see it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out that I saw it in a completely empty theater. There was like the five of us.
So how did this movie do commercially speaking?
Let's see here. This movie. Well, I don't know. It cost $34 million. I know that. That's Wikipedia's got that much.
All right, while Joe is still looking up Box Office Mojo, we can get into Adam Sandler plays three characters in this movie. He plays basically his self-insert, Davy Stone, is that right?
Yes, Davy Stone.
Davy Stone, and then he plays Whitey, who's kind of the other primary character, and then he plays Whitey's sister, Eleanor, which I was surprised by. I did not know that. And the question I have to both of you is, did they pitch shift his voice for Eleanor?
I have no idea, but I think it's worth noting that there are, like, two women in this cast.
Yeah, that's true. There's Eleanor, and then...
No, I mean, like, actual women voice actresses.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So they're...
Yeah, the character that plays the love interest in this film, Jennifer, is Adam Sandler's wife, Jackie Sandler. And then whenever Jennifer starts singing, it becomes Alison Krauss.
Yes, okay. Alison Krauss. They got her.
They got Alison Krauss for
Crazy Nights to sing opposite the guy that sang Lunch Lady Land. Alison Krauss.
Well, she only has two numbers too, unfortunately.
But yeah, because Tyra Banks sings in the other one.
Would that not have been wild, though? Like, Alison Krauss's soundtrack album of Adam Sandler's 8 Crazy Nights?
I'd listen to it on Spotify. I'd buy it on vinyl. Like,
you know what? That's like, the perfect way to move records, too. Like, make her do all the music. Adam Sandler, I know you do the funny songs, but, like, we have a real musician now, so we're just going to let her do it.
Yeah.
They're going to do an Inspired By album?
Okay. Yeah.
And then we're going to review it on the podcast on OST Party.
Next Christmas.
And then I will spin it on Record Saturday.
Love it.
Yeah. Full synergy.
Synergy, yes. Everybody.
Okay, so final numbers here. This movie cost $34 million to make. According to Box Office Mojo, worldwide box office, $23.8 million.
Ouch.
That's a lot more money than I expected it would make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially with the Jews running Hollywood and everything.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, for real, right?
Help us out.
Those numbers might be goosed up a little bit, you know? Adam Sandler's big, right? Come on. Christmas movies are big, right? Come on.
Hit me with that international number. How much did it make internationally?
$246,000.
I knew it. I don't think Mr. Sandler has too much aplomb outside of the United States.
That's a riot.
I very much doubt it, yeah. According to Box Office Mojo, this is the 198th highest grossing animated feature of all time.
Well,
what is directly above and below it, and where does Cool World fit in?
Well, that's the best question I've heard all day. Let's see here. Oh my god, this is horrible. Directly above it, at 197, is Ferngully, The Last Rainforest.
What?
Directly below it, at spot 199, The Iron Giant.
What?
That's the saddest short story ever.
Talk about a kick in the dick.
Wowie zowie. Universe, you couldn't have done that one any better. Wow.
This movie did The Iron Giant dirty in front of its dad.
I'm so sad now.
Cool World is the 227th highest grossing animated film of all time. Which seems grossly out of proportion to me.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, God. Anyway.
We only mentioned Cool World because it's episode 3 of OST Party.
Yes. Coming soon to a podcast near you.
Oh, God. I can't wait for that. All right. I got to listen to your podcast now. I was just being nice about it before, but now I really do need to listen to
it. It's pretty fucking amazing. Probably the best podcast in the world.
Oh yeah, it's gonna take over. It's gonna storm the gates of the podcast community. Anyway, we need to get back to Adam Sandler real quick.
I'm too sad now. I can't continue. I'm like the midway point of an Adam Sandler movie where there's a big melodramatic wash and he cries and screams, just like in Click and in this and in all of them. I'm right at the third act break and I'm screaming into the rain. That is my mood right now.
All right.
I hate to break it to you, Libby, but this third act's going to be half an hour long.
Oh, God.
No, the one thing I will say about 8 Crazy Nights, it is mercifully short.
Yes.
There is not an ounce of fat on this movie, which is actually, that's a lie, because there's way too much stuff that they just waste in this 75-minute movie. There are approximately 8 musical numbers, and only, I think, we agreed one of them was any good.
You're both wrong because the opening song is great, and we'll talk about that. And
All right. Well, that's as good a lead in as I can think of. So, Libby, tell us about that opener. How does this movie open?
This movie opens with a weird voiceover that we never quite establish who's doing it. And it's this ideal little town of Dukesville. And everyone, or Dukesbury, not Dukesville, yeah. Dukesbury. And everyone is happy. And you know it's a fantasy because the giant ice sculpture of Santa and the giant ice sculpture of the menorah are the same size. I have never been in a town where that is true. There's usually like one tiny menorah and then 1,000 Christmas decorations and Santa. And they're like, well, we have a menorah. So, and growing up Jewish, that is really frustrating. You sing like, oh, Hanukkah, oh, Hanukkah, come light the menorah in choir and then 1,000 other Christmas songs. This is pure fucking fantasy, everybody, that anyone gives a shit about Hanukkah. People are constantly saying like, happy Hanukkah. It doesn't happen.
There is one great joke that kind of relates to that in this movie.
The banquet.
At the banquet, yeah. Where the mayor like greets everybody, happy, you know, Merry Christmas, everybody, and the whole place explodes, Merry Christmas! And then he says, also, Happy Hanukkah. And like one family goes, Happy Hanukkah.
Well, yeah, but like they still like put up a giant ice menorah. And I'm like, okay, that's awesome, but completely like, unreal. That's a super unrealistic. I believe like the store logo's coming to life. I'm like, okay, that could happen. But the giant menorah next to the giant Santa Claus, I'm like, guys, come on. Let's
and
not
the giant Santa Claus and menorah being 5 stories tall, too. That's believable, but not that they're the same size.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Also, just that they kind of just play... The whole town kind of pays lip service to, you know, being all inclusive and celebrating the whole swath of the holidays together. Because I don't know, the only person that really seems to do that in the film is Whitey, but we'll get to him in a minute.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think if there are any. There's one hyper racist yellow face character,
oh, no.
And everybody else is super white, and that's the Chinese food restaurant owner. Played by Rob Schneider. The less said about this, the better, except that it is so...
No.
It makes Mickey Rooney...
We need to talk about this.
Yeah, in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
It's a gut... Like, I knew it was bad and just a terrible caricature and the worst, but it was just such a gut punch at the end when it was... It's bad regardless of who it's played by, but the fact that it's played by Rob Schneider or, you know, any white person or any non-Asian person, it's even for 2002, it's such a bad look.
Oh, yeah.
It's so, like, put on. It is, like you said, it is like Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's bad.
Yeah.
It's also especially weird because, like, of all the Saturday Night Live people that are in the movie, Rob Schneider's character is the only one who's not animated to look like Rob Schneider.
Yeah.
Yes.
You could picture him like, you know, pulling his eyes back while in the booth, like just being super racist.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
I say that I'm not going to let this go because it is going to personally inform my suggestion of a rating on quality at the end, because this movie is very much a product of its time. With the, like, fatphobic jokes and...
The transphobic jokes
and the... the scatological jokes, whatever. It's an Adam Sandler film. I can deal with that. And the jokes against mentally handicapped people and everything like that. It's very much a 2002 movie, but it's like... They knew better in 2002 than to cast Rob Schneider in a terrible accent. Chinese man role. Like, come on.
And especially because that seems to be the only, like, person of color in the film.
And it's absolutely played for a joke, which is, you know, he's not a well-rounded character. He's a two-dimensional character. He's a cutout.
And especially because he keeps showing up in the film, like, to just, like, get that one little extra joke in there, you know, in every other scene.
And and you're talking about quality, too. Like, it's really weird, too, because he, like, in the opening scenes, he, like, lays it on so thick with the terrible, like, stereotypical grammatical errors. And then, like, later, it's not as... thick either, like, even in its bigotry, it's not even like applied with the same veneer throughout.
Yeah, it's not consistent.
Yeah,
well, what do you expect from the making copies guy?
Fair enough.
All right. I think I've said enough of my piece.
So yeah, Davey has dined and dashed on this Chinese restaurant and its entrepreneur, and he's sort of drunkenly stumbling through the town trying to escape the police as he's singing a song about how much he hates Christmas and how much he hates himself and how much he hates everybody.
Yes, and the way it leads in, it's super inorganic. And obviously, like, breaking into song is already an inorganic thing. Unless you're me or Linda Belcher, you don't just, like, randomly walk around singing.
Right.
But it really, there's no, like, when you think of, like, a Disney musical, for instance, there's usually, like, a little bit of a music cue, and then it goes into the singing. This just, like, starts off with kind of some, like, fast-paced music, and then it goes into the melody of the song. I don't even care. I love this song. This is on my, like, bad mood Christmas mix, which I listen to more than my happy Christmas mix. And I'm not one of those people that, like, dislikes Christmas or is, like, super cynical about it, but I find myself listening to this song a lot. But it's, there's something about this melody that just, like, gives me little chills. I can't explain it. And I think his voice fits it really well. And it's, I don't know, there's just something about it that I really, really like.
That's the thing that people, a lot of people tend to forget about Adam Sandler, is that, like, he does do, like, a lot of musical comedy, you know? So I firmly believe that, like, he has the chops to at least back up, you know, a drunken asshole singing a song about himself, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it fits.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's definitely sort of shoehorned right. There could be a better transition in there, but there's something about the melody of it and, you know, the sort of, his very relaxed vocal performance. He kind of slides into it. It's, you know, not, is it, I mean, he's drunk, so it's, but it's not like slurring. It's just, it's very relaxed, very kind of lovely vocal stylings. But you don't, later he's sort of doing too much of it. I'm thinking, like, in the mall song, the intervention song, I think it's called, on the soundtrack, he's trying too hard, but this one seems kind of fits real natural in his range.
Yeah, yeah.
I find it hard to believe that a man after have you had scorpion bowls, either of you?
No.
They're a wonderful drink, but they're intended for two people. And he had four of them. I refuse
in five
to believe,
minutes!
Yeah, I refuse to believe that a man can snowboard on a trash can while harmonizing as well as Adam Sandler does after drinking four scorpion bowls.
Well, I think it's because he drank it in 5 minutes, they haven't hit yet.
He's got the buzz going, I suppose so.
So by the time he crashes into that ice sculpture, he's feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he ruins the giant menorah that doesn't really actually exist. No, did he hit the menorah or the Santa Claus? I can't remember.
I think he hit the Santa Claus, which collapsed into the menorah.
Correct. Well, that's not symbolic of anything.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm.
Time.
Libby, are you saying that Christmas horns in on other holidays' action?
Well, maybe they could have put a jack-o'-lantern in there, could horn in on that too.
You know what? I bet if they could have, they would have. But no, so Davey is cruising through town, running from the cops, and he's in the one line that I wrote that he sings, "I hate love, I hate you, I hate me."
Yeah, and it's just like, quit laying it on real thick, you idiot. That's the one where I'm like,
we get it, you suck.
We've already figured that one out. Mm-hmm. So
Whitey gets hauled off to court for his transgressions.
Davey.
In front of the most lenient judge ever. This man is 35 and has a DUI and stole a snowmobile, and they're letting him do public service.
And he's Judge Exposition, because he's like, I remember when you were a great basketball player in this town and you had a great job. It's just like, oh my god. Film is so inorganic. This film has no...
We forgot to tell you anything about this person. Let's do it right now in this horrible info dump.
Yeah, it's really... yeah. It's really bad.
But instead of sending him off to jail for 10 years, he gets community service at the behest of one Whitey... What's his last name? Doesn't matter.
I don't think...
Whitey Bulger.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking, but I wasn't going to say it. But also, that's not how... I mean, there's trials. The judge just isn't like, oh, by the way, your sentence. Like, that's... I don't know. I just feel like he deserves to stay in court.
I don't think Adam Sandler or anyone who wrote the film has ever been to court. And
well, they should.
That surprises me because there have been several courtroom scenes in Adam Sandler movies.
That's true.
You'd think somebody would have figured it out by now.
Yeah. I would think my lawyer friend would be like, this is not going to stand.
So Whitey takes Davey under his wing and offers to sort of shepherd him through his community service as a youth basketball coach, is perfectly perfectly in line with what he knows because he used to be a basketball prodigy as a kid.
Yes. And when you first see Whitey, the thing you need to visualize, he is super tiny. He has one giant foot and one tiny foot. And he talks with a really high, squeaky Adam Sandler voice. And he is adorable and cherub-like, and everyone is mean to him. And it is sad.
It is the saddest thing in the world, yes.
And it's that weird, I mean, one of the things with this movie, and it, you know, we'll talk about this throughout, it's that weird, like, sweet, mean humor where you have this sweet character, and everyone's super mean to him. But anytime we're supposed to, like, really feel sorry for him, they do something weird and goofy to, like, distract us from that. Like, you never have any real empathy. You're never supposed to have any real empathy for this character. You're supposed to have this, like, melodramatic empathy right at the end. But then the script continues doing mean shit to him.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, and to be clear, the movie's really not about Davey. It's about Whitey.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Whitey is really the main character of this movie, I almost feel like.
Like three quarters to 80% of this movie is Adam Sandler just doing scenes with himself, because we've got Whitey and then we've got his twin sister Eleanor, who is equally strange and
delightful, I think,
delightful,
is the word you're looking
yes.
for. Delightful.
Strange and delightful. Like she has this thing about like doing karate and obsessing over a lost wig that some kid stole 40 years ago and playing the trombone, and it's just a lot of weird shit going on at once. That's the best way I can describe
it. And it's weird because, like, I think it's supposed to be weird, but I think the older I get, the more endearing it is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, she's not weird, she's adorable. Like, I don't want to be, I don't want to make fun of her the way everybody else does. Like, I'm sort of here for it.
I felt the same way watching it this time around. And again, I don't know if she or like if Adam Sandler's voice was pitch shifted, but I would not have guessed that it was Adam Sandler doing Eleanor.
Yeah, this is the I finally realized that. Like, I just assumed it was the same person who did Jennifer's voice.
Yeah, or yeah,
or Tyra Banks, or Ellen Rose, Albertini Dow shows up in this movie, and she was the rapping granny in The Wedding Singer.
Oh,
that's what I sort of assumed it was.
So, yeah, Whitey is coaching basketball, and no, he's refereeing basketball, and he's got Davey in there sort of showing him the ropes of how to coach basketball youth league style. And
Davey's being a piece of shit because he's garbage.
That's the movie. Davey's being a piece of shit. Yeah.
The first scene where Davey is sort of with Whitey coaching basketball is, again, it's another really, it's a mean sequence. It's just mean. And I know it's supposed to be funny, but there's an overweight kid that he makes fun of and tells him he needs to wear a bra. But that being said, so he tells him, like, next time you're on my court, you better be wearing a bra. And the kid starts crying. And we're all supposed to laugh because it was 2002. And Whitey says, "That's okay, son. You have very nice boobs," which I'm ashamed to say still cracks me up.
But it's shocking to me how long they run with that joke, because in the next scene they go to the mall and we see the fat kid in the Victoria's Secret trying on a bra.
I know, but then we never see him again, which would be weird. You'd think he'd bring him back at the banquet, like,
right,
and do some sort of, I don't know, some sort of, again, like, transphobic joke. Maybe he's wearing an evening gown or something, but, like, they missed an opportunity to make another real shitty joke.
Or no, he just has, like, really good back posture now.
Yeah, but but that line, Whitey's line, is, I mean, it's so sincere, and you know it's, like, so deep from that character's heart. My friends and I quoted that all the time. And I'm ashamed because I laughed at it again. I'm like, I'm fucking trash. Okay.
And then Davey calls the game by saying, "Fatty's team loses because I want to see him cry again."
And he starts to cry. Yeah, and it's just like, this is so, and I get it, you're not supposed to like Davey, but as we get later into the film, and there's, like, the 5-minute sequence. I mean, if you time it, it's probably 5 to 7-minute sequence of him being nice. You you've had so much time of him being a dick that, like, it's hard to buy that transformation, and he's just so horrible. And it's also, and again, it's fatophobic. And...
Yeah. I mean, it's everything. It's like unpleasant. Xenophobic.
Yeah.
It's xenophobic, because, like, the only people he doesn't give shit to are, like, quote-unquote normal kids who are just kids, and they don't deserve his scorn. Nobody deserves his scorn, but he gives it to them anyway. But I don't know, the meanness that comes across in this film really does seem kind of harsh to me. Like, I know they're trying to paint him in the worst light possible, but man, they really just go for it. I don't want Davey to be redeemed.
Yeah, you're just like, fuck just this guy. He's just a big mean bully, and, you know, and then, like, Whitey has a seizure, and everyone's, like, mean about that, and it's just like, that's, like, I don't know, it's so horrible. He's so...
It's like they tried to find this. They tried to ask the question, how many lines can we cross?
Yeah, but it's not even. And I think that was that, again, like, we're coming out of, like, this sort of mean for the sake of mean humor. You know, Seinfeld is like that. Like, this liking anything is, you know, South Park, caring about anything or anybody is for idiots. And I think the, you know, the seizure thing is played as a joke throughout. And I'm not going to, you know, be like, oh, people who have seizures are people too, like, but that it's never given any gravitas. It's just like a weird thing that he does, and it's like,
yeah, it's like, let's animate Whitey doing something strange for 30 seconds.
Yeah, like, is that really necessary? Like, you've already done so much to make this character a freak. Do you really need to, like, make seizures like his freak thing? Like, he's got weird feet, like, that's... He has a furry butt. Like,
he's basically like a little hobbit.
I know, and it just seems so unnecessary to make fun of him for that. Like,
they make fun of him for everything. I know. He's the punching bag for the entire film.
There's a lot that's unnecessary about this film, I feel like.
Yeah.
All of it is unnecessary, I think.
This episode is unnecessary. Like, it's all unnecessary.
I know that they're trying to paint Davey in this light where he's like, oh, isn't he terrible? He's the worst. You're not supposed to like him. But it's, especially in the light that this came out in 2002, before like new sincerity and cynicism was still running high. Like, you could tell that they were playing everything that Davey was doing up for yucks, expecting the target audience to kind of love it, even though they're not supposed to love it.
Yeah.
His redemption doesn't feel any, like, real at any point, because you can't sincerely attach to this character.
Right.
Like,
I want to go back to something that Brad just said, because it's got my brain thinking now, and, like, this came out in the middle of, you know, the first Bush term, which, you know, it's in the shadow. I don't want to say it's in the shadow of 9/11, but it is. It's about a year later. So you would think that, like, that spirit would kind of be running throughout, like, holiday movies like this, where, you know, it's all about Americans coming together to make their communities better.
To have giant menorahs.
Yeah, exactly.
Just going to keep coming back to that.
This really, it doesn't go there. Like, it shocks me that this exists this came out when it did, and it's just the most mean-spirited fucking thing ever.
And yeah,
you know?
And the sort of kindness pieces that come out of it, anytime there's a moment where there's something good, they immediately ruin it with a joke. Like, they can't, because you can't have any sincerity. And even the sort of dramatic, like, what would be in a normal film made by real filmmakers and good people would be a moment of true drama where you as the viewer connect with that character, is just so melodramatic and overwrought, as if, like, to punch you and be like, you better feel sorry for this character now. His fucking parents died. You better fucking cry. You better feel sorry for him. His parents died. Like, okay, well, we're...
It's almost as though we're expected to feel sorry for him just because he's Adam Sandler, and we love Adam Sandler, right?
Yeah.
Right, guy. Yeah.
Well, this is something, like, you see it in a lot of his. I mean, like, Click, which came out 2 years later.
Yeah.
The same kind of thing, like that melodramatic, like, where he's screaming and crying in the rain, which I remember, like, tearing up during, and they're like, "What are you fucking doing, you idiot? You can't cry at an Adam Sandler movie. This is manipulating you. You're a fucking idiot." And I've never told anyone that before. Hey, podcast. Greetings, listeners. Greetings, holiday shoppers.
I got news for you, Libby. Your secret's safe with us.
Yeah.
My life and my Twitter account are an open book. Y'all know everything about me. So, but it does that. Like, it takes that, because you're never allowed to really connect with any of his characters, the melodramatic moments, the real moments of sincerity, have to be punched into your fucking skull until you are nothing but, like, brain and bone in the theater seat.
Yeah. And that's a good point for us to pivot and talk about, I guess, Whitey's song about... It's called The Patch Song on the soundtrack. It's his song where he sings about the thing that he wants most in the world, which is a very Howard Ashman kind of thing to do. Like, Howard Ashman always said, like, you know, at the beginning of the second act, you have to have your focal point character sing a song about the thing that they want most. And so we get Whitey singing a song about how he wants to win the 35th annual, like, Citizen of the Year patch, I think is what it is.
Well, I think we're heading into the second act of this podcast, so what would you guys each sing a song about before we get into this? The thing you want the most.
I'd sing a song about how I want another drink right now.
I want this to end because I want to go to sleep. Yes.
Oh, I was going to say fried chicken. So. Okay.
The thing I want most in this world is sleep because I'm so tired, you guys.
You son of a bitch. Now you got to stay up and talk. Talk about 8 crazy nights. We're going to go all night long, baby. We're going to go all night long.
Oh, as an aside, there's a dude that I follow on Twitter. He makes good music, but he did an event last year where he live streamed, like, on Twitch 8 crazy nights for 8 nights in a row and took attendance to see who would join him to watch 8 crazy nights for 8 crazy nights.
That's amazing. Who is this? I have to follow him. I love him.
I think it's Dendy Crew. He worked with Drew, if you know the webcomic Toothpaste for Dinner.
No.
He did a couple of albums with him under the name Hell Orbs. Really, really cool guy.
Awesome. I love him.
All right. At Dendy Crew. DendyCrew.
Okay.
Yes, I believe so.
There it is. Dendy Crew.
So Whitey, the thing Whitey wants most is to win the Citizen of the Year patch because he's the one person in town who tries to help everybody. He does things selflessly for little to no money. And all he wants is to be respected and liked in town. And Davey sort of spits in his face and reminds him constantly, like, no one knows who you are. No one cares about you. And it's another sort of notch in that what do you call it? I don't know. It's another signpost that, like, we really shouldn't give a shit what happens to Davey or what has happened to Davey because he's a horrible person.
Yeah, well, I think we can all rest assured that Whitey's getting into the good place.
Yes.
Yes.
So, none of us will see him there. None of us are going to. We laughed at this movie, which I think is an automatic ticket to the bad place. So.
Correct.
But Whitey, in all of his animated glory, will be in the good place. Yeah, and later in Bum Bitty, which is the last song, the last full song in the film, you know, he talks about, like, how he will, you know, help you for free or at most a dollar because he's trying to take care of him and his sister. And so he just, like, does odd jobs around town. And everyone, again, like, they just treat him like garbage.
Odd jobs like cleaning out the porta potties or
putting the star on the Christmas tree.
Holding up in a TV antenna or a coat hanger.
Yeah.
We're going way out of order here now, but
it's fine. This movie feels completely out of order.
It is,
yeah.
in a courtroom sense,
yes. But no, but so he does. He wants this patch because he wants, and I don't even think he wants it in a weird way because I would feel like recognition would be out of his character. Like, he doesn't want to be recognized. I think it's that he. I get the sense that he has seen all these other people that he admires being honored, and he wants to think that he's as good as they are because he admires them so much and what they do for the community. So,
I think he wants to belong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he feels like it's his turn.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is.
And it's like, that's not wrong.
No, you know? No.
And it
There is maybe one understated scene where you're supposed to feel sorry for Whitey, and that is when somebody else, spoiler alert, receives the patch. He stands up and really, like, since is clearly shaken and upset, but, you know, claps for the other person. And it's they don't play it up like they do all of the other emotional gut punches as much. And it, I don't know. I feel like it's like the one not sincere even, but understated. Honest use of, like, I don't feel like they're trying to, well, I mean, obviously they're trying to manipulate your emotions, but it doesn't feel as disingenuous as some of the other moments.
And it's true to the character.
Yeah.
He would. And actually when he gets up and leaves in that scene, that's the one that sort of feels like not quite his character, because you think that he would
stay
and be the first guy in line to congratulate him, even though it's killing him. But, and it's really, it's not, there's not a cash prize or anything. It's just, it's a patch. All he wants is that patch.
And it's to tie this to a better Christmas movie. It's like in A Christmas Story when the dad looks at the lamp and just says, it's a major award.
Yeah.
You know, it means something to him, damn it.
Yeah. And it gives, we never know what Davey wants. We never get a sense because we're not told right off, like, but we're given something, rooting interest. For Whitey, we want him to get that patch. We're rooting for him to get that patch. What are we rooting for Davey for? Like, the guy's a fucking scumbag. Like, why do we give a shit what happens to him? We're never...
Exactly. Like, are we rooting for Davey to stop being a piece of shit?
Not really.
Because we're never given... No. I mean, we're not given the reason, like, why he's a piece of shit until, you know, halfway through the film. When they're like, oh, his parents died. Like, well, you know, I know plenty of people who've had shitty lives.
Parents died when he, like, let's cut to the chase here. Like, his parents died when he was 12.
The first night of Hanukkah at a,
yes,
they didn't make it to a basketball game that Whitey was coaching.
And so that kind of sent Davey into a depression spiral and turned him into sort of this drunk who lives in a trailer out in the woods. And, you know, in as much as, like, that in itself is sad and I feel bad for him, like, the rest of it he did to himself, so I really don't care.
And it's also it's shorthand for character development.
Right they really skimped on that and just sort of took the cheap way out.
Yeah,
which, you know, in a 75 minute movie, sure, you would probably want to do that, but they don't really do it very elegantly.
Yeah, but like Luke Skywalker's parents died too and he became a Jedi, so
yeah.
Speaking of inelegantly taking the cheap way out, do you mind if I hit fast forward on the plot a little bit here?
Yes, please. Thank you.
All right. So Davey is still a piece of shit when he's refereeing the game. So White decides to take him to the mall. There at the mall, he finds out that his childhood friend, is it Jennifer? I don't even remember.
Yes, Jennifer.
Hell yeah. I nailed it. has moved back into town after she... had a divorce with her husband, I believe.
Yeah.
The next day, we see a little bit of Whitey's home life, where he goes home and hangs out with Eleanor, and they soak their feet, which I must mention is an underappreciated pleasure in life. If you have not soaked your feet after a long day, definitely give it a try.
Yeah, especially on a cold night. Put some lavender Epsom salts in there. Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, hell yeah. It's great. All right, and then we cut to the next day. Whitey is doing odd jobs to pay for his and Eleanor's expenses. Their house is decked out with a bunch of Christmas and Hanukkah lights.
Whitey is very all inclusive. Like, he wishes, you know, Davey a happy Hanukkah and wishes everybody else, you know, just good tidings all around. Like, that's kind of who Whitey is.
Yeah, he's right. And actually, there's a scene in the beginning where he's like in a very happy first day of Hanukkah, and the guy's like, "You're not Jewish." He's like, "Yeah, it doesn't mean I can't enjoy the season, and Merry Christmas to you." Like, which is so nice, especially like Whitey does not believe in the war on Christmas.
No,
right.
Like, I feel like if we didn't swear quite so much, Whitey would very much enjoy our show.
Yeah.
Yes.
He would. He probably would enjoy it even if you did swear, because he would just be like, well, that's how the kids talk these days. So, he's just a good dude.
I prefer to say the word tushy.
Tushy, yes. And he would enjoy other fine podcasts on the Christmas Podcast Network. anyways, So the next day he's cleaning out porta potties to help pay for his expenses, and Davey is a piece of shit and kicks him in a porta potty down a hill and turns him into a poopsicle. He stays there all night until some deer come and lick the scat off him, with the grossest scene in the movie.
Well, there's actually a note on that. They were planning to cut that, and the audiences loved it, so they left it in. Test audiences really liked that scene.
Oh, great.
So test audiences, if you're listening to this, go fuck yourselves. Go fuck yourselves.
I have to know now. I have to know. If they didn't cut that, what the hell did they
did cut? Did they cut? Because the deer at one point turned to the camera with literal shit-eating grins.
I hate it. They do it like 3 or 4 times in the movie, and I hate it so much.
Yes, yes, they do. All by also worth noting, I believe Adam Sandler also did the voices of the deer. Is that correct?
I think he did. Probably. Yeah, just like little like kind of sounds.
With the exception of the poop eating scene, I fucking love the deer. They're a delight. I would watch a whole short film about them.
They're cute, except for that really gross scene.
Exactly. Like when they're later, we see them. I mean, it's cute that they help. They help Whitey with his car. And actually, that's a really good line that continues through the... Because a lot of jokes, even the really bad ones, are dropped. But that is a joke they continue actually through the rest of the film. The deer show up to help them get ready for the banquet.
They just go into the house. It's great.
They're wearing Eleanor's wigs. You see them like on the lawn. And the scene where they're wearing her wigs is hysterical. They show up at the banquet. There's another poop scene. But then they hide Adam Sandler. Davey. Yes.
They hide him from the cops by forming a pyramid.
It's the best joke in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because we'll get to that in just a second. But I feel like the movie could have done a lot more with this, because it's pretty much the only meta joke in the entire movie, where it's playing with the fact that this is an Adam Sandler cartoon, and it's like, oh, animals do Disney cartoon stuff, you know, they're cute and they help humans out. And
right, like, if not for the deer, the only really cartoony thing about this movie is Whitey and Eleanor.
Yeah,
correct.
Like, so, if you did this live action, I do not know how you do those characters. I guess you don't.
Yeah, or really bad CGI. That'd be terrible.
Dana Carvey's on the case.
Oh, God.
All right.
Don't you threaten us.
We fast forward to the next day, and Davey is with Whitey again, and Whitey is looking after Jennifer's son. I don't remember his name.
Benjamin?
Yeah, that's right. Benjamin. Davey ends up insulting some people who are playing 2-on-2 basketball, and they challenge him and Whitey to a match. Whitey pretty much gets immediately knocked out, so Davey works with Benjamin to defeat these two goons at basketball, and they have a bonding moment, but then Davey tells Benjamin to say biatch, and his mother walks in at that point, so she's definitely peeved. And then we are treated to a song where they're both driving home separately, talking about the way things used to be and how Davey used to be so good and how they used to be BFFs.
And we get some lovely, like, sort of flashback scenes of Davey and Jennifer as kids doing the things that like young kids in puppy love kind of do, and hanging out and whatnot. And this is where the Alison Krauss song comes in.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's such a, this is actually, I mean, it's super melodramatic, and like especially the way they talk about like his drinking is so like high school, after school special, that it's really embarrassing. Yes. But every, that aside, it's a perfectly sensible, you know, halfway through second act song. And they, again, that every moment of sincerity has to be punctuated with just some bullshit cheap joke, including a really transphobic joke, and it's like, why are you doing this to us? Like, let us, like, trust your audience to be able to handle big boy emotions or big girl emotions.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yes.
they go like a full verse of like it's completely serious and completely straight faced, and then in the chorus we just get random characters saying random wacky things that happen to rhyme, and it's completely unnecessary. Like up to and including Mayor Kevin Nealon revealing that his wife is a man, and it's just like some guy in drag with a 5 o'clock shadow and a voice that sounds like this, and it's just.
It's really disgusting.
Unnecessary.
It's the worst and very 2002 and so lazy and so bad.
It's so Adam Sandler.
Yeah, and it's just, it's not even, you know, like a joke is fine, but it's that the movie refuses to ever let us feel anything. And it's almost like you see this later with, especially like I'm thinking of like Daddy's Boy. Where he seems so mad that we might be trying to connect with characters. So he's like, how could you be so dumb as to connect with these characters? Oh, I'm going to make a mean joke.
Like that awful Adam Sandler laugh where you know he's just like faking it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so contemptuous of the audience. And going back to Davey's song, like at least that seems sincere to the character. This one is just like, it just hates its audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it hates that it has to play the sincere moment,
and it's just one of those things. Like, then don't just make like a goofy jerk movie. We're fine.
Yeah, like look, Adam Sandler, you're the one who decided to make a holiday film. This is the shit you have to do.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he's like zigging where these movies try to zag, and he's so obvious he doesn't want to be here doing this thing.
Ugh. It's very much this movie trying to have its cake and eat it too, and it's the worst.
Have its latkes and eat it too.
There you
yes.
go. There you go. But that leads into the next scene where at the end of the song we discover that Davey's trailer has been burnt down by one of the goons that he played basketball with.
And that's because he forced that to me is very strap. Which is one a little extreme for goons. But I guess they did make him eat a jockstrap. So but That's the one line of the song that's really good. Like, it's like, and my trailer is on fire. Hey, what? Like, that's a good joke.
It's a good comic beat, yeah. So Davey has to go in and stay with Whitey and Eleanor.
Well,
and
very quickly,
then the best song in the movie happens.
Well, yes. Very quickly, he runs into the trailer and retrieves an envelope.
Yes.
This we will come back to. Go on.
It's very important. It's like his Star-Lord moment.
Yeah, and it's definitely like you can't miss it. It's played really obviously. It might as well be like, this is, we will need this later, so don't forget it, everybody. You're all a bunch of idiots. Love, Adam Sandler.
I'm sorry, I have to take back what I just said. Eight Crazy Nights doesn't have a Star-Lord moment. Star-Lord has an Eight Crazy Nights moment.
I think we are all in agreement there.
All right. So that leads us into the best song in the movie.
No! It's the second best song in the movie. I'll fight you guys on this one.
Agree to disagree.
The good middle song of the movie.
It's okay.
The most fun song of the movie.
Yes, they're telling Davey all the things that he's not allowed to do in the house, but using basketball metaphors. Specifically, this thing or that thing is a technical foul.
I'm laughing just thinking
It's a great jazzy number, and it's good, and the whole movie could have used a lot more of being like this.
Because it's one that it's fun, and it's because Davey isn't taking center stage, like, he's actually sort of
interacting with other characters.
Yeah, Whitey makes all the best jokes, and is able to play off Davey rather than the other, or Davey is forced to play off Whitey as opposed to the other way around.
Yes.
Right, it's like, welcome to our world now.
Yeah, and it's really catchy. I was doing a story about a local basketball league that started, and this might have actually been even before I talked to you, Joe. This might have been what, you know, put this whole episode in motion. I got technical fouls stuck in my head, and I had not thought about Eight Crazy Nights in so long, but I was like sitting at my desk being like, that's a technical foul. I'm like, what is wrong with me? And I mentioned this again. My friend Beth, who I saw this with, is now a lawyer. She has a new baby. She is amazing. She was one of my maids of honor. I was her maid of honor. She was one of my bridesmaids. And I mentioned this to her, and she started laughing. I just said, like, I'm thinking about technical foul from Eight Crazy Nights, and she was howling. She's like, I have not thought about that in forever. So She's also been home with the baby for a while, so she's a little crazy. But
congratulations, Beth.
Yes, Beth. She's great. The baby's name is Rizzo. It's not really Rizzo. Oh. I'm not gonna say what the baby's real name is.
That's fine. We can protect a baby's anonymity.
More babies need to be named after Muppets. Yes.
Yes.
I always give my friends weird baby names. If you guys ever have babies, I'll give you guys weird baby names.
Oh boy.
Let's promise.
I'm ready.
Then the movie kind of comes to a halt because I forgot what happens next.
What happens is about a 5-minute montage, probably less, because it just seemed longer because this movie is fucking endless, where Adam Sandler does the bare minimum of human decency. Everyone's like, yay, he's transformed! This is great!
He's not actively being an asshole, and that's enough.
Yeah,
he is a literal neutral human being.
Like, hooray, he got somebody a cup of coffee. What a nice dude. He helped somebody clean spider webs. Wow. We should basically give him the Nobel Peace Prize.
You know what? Fuck Whitey. You know who deserves the patch? Davey.
Yeah.
Let's just give it to Davey.
But you do see him putting Whitey's name in the ballot box.
Mm-hmm. Which is maybe the one sweet thing that he does in this entire movie, except for the very end.
Exercises his civic duty and votes? Yeah.
I don't know. This had more of a pull than the whole last song of the movie did. Is just the simple anonymous act of him voting for Whitey.
Yeah.
You know? Because at the end of the movie, obviously, we're supposed to feel that Davey's changed, but you still have this tinge of like, well, he's on the run from the law, so he has nothing to lose at this point.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be like part of it, but it, I don't know. The fact that it's anonymous, that he does this without any need for recognition strikes me as the one sincere good thing that Davey does in this movie.
Yeah, honestly. Which makes you think it was in there by accident.
It almost feels like it, honestly.
Like, oh, we were going to have deer, like, eat this out of his hand and then fart and, like, shit diarrhea all over everybody, but that scene, we couldn't animate it properly.
We really wanted to have a scene where Adam Sandler makes a big deal out of the fact that he's going to have to vote, but it just made him seem like an asshole, and we just don't want to do that.
But then, as
Rob Schneider tells us in narration, Davey has a butthole relapse.
Oh, that's Rob Schneider doing the narration?
Uh huh.
Oh, now I'm really sad. This has been the saddest part of my life.
Like, I know you or Brad said, like, we can't identify the narrator. It was like, me. Well, I know who it is.
That was me. Really? Because he was doing like a normal voice. He wasn't like, make a copies, a crazy nudge, or Deuce Bigelow.
He had a brief moment of lucidity, and they used it to make him record narration for this movie.
Oh, poor Rob Schneider.
Poor Rob. You know, he's out of the Sandler loop now, I think. Like, I think he asked for too much money for Grown Ups 2, so
he's living in Adam Sandler's basement! How much money? Yeah. Like, can I have an extra box of corn dog?
That's a true fact, though. Like, he asked for too much money to, like, for either Grown Ups 2 or some other Adam Sandler movie, and Sandler's just like, oh, okay, if that's how you feel, then how about no?
Get out of my basement.
And they just, like, shut the door in his face. Like, sorry, we're gonna go record Hotel Transylvania 3 without you.
Holy oh, man, you, wow. Wow, that guy would give literally anybody a job. And Adam Sandler, we should say.
He gives Kevin James work. I mean, come on.
And Adam Sandler is, like, notoriously a really, really good dude. Like, he
right.
is,
yeah.
which always makes, like, his asshole character so weird to me, because he's supposedly really, and if you want something, an Adam Sandler thing that will really actually make you cry, his song about Chris Farley is so...
I haven't heard
that. Oh my god. It's beautiful. And he still manages to, like, get a couple little punches in there, but they're not mean. Like, you could tell, like, this still, like, breaking his heart mm-hmm. all these years later. And it's so sweet. And you're like, this guy really can be sincere. So why is he being such a douche all the time? Like, why does he make movies where he's the biggest douche in Doucheopolis? Like, I don't get it.
I really genuinely think it's just that he's lazy. And he realized, like, I don't have to try anymore.
I guess. But, like, he's... And it might just be, again, like, that era he came up with. Because this character is exactly like the character in Billy Madison. It's exactly like the character in... Really, the only character of his that isn't a jerk is like a, you know, prior to this is The Wedding Singer. He's a good dude in The Wedding Singer. The Wedding Singer is his best film.
Yeah. And even then, like, he's a jerk, but it's really not entirely his fault. This here, it's 100,000% like, Davey's fault that Davey's a piece of shit.
Yeah, and his parents are dead in The Wedding Singer, too. And he's a good dude who is maybe, like, too nice and has, like, some moments of assholishness. But, plug, we're going to talk about The Wedding Singer on OST Party one of these days. So, plug for
sounds
OST
like
Party.
Fun. I can't wait. It's going to be great. I can't wait. Gonna get a lot of 80s goodness up in this piece. So yeah, I think to bring this back around to Christmas, like I think the point of Davey being such a piece of shit is that they're really trying to make him out to be a Scrooge character, but there's definitely a line where you can cross it and it's you go too far and you can't come back.
Well, the thing was Scrooge starts learning like right at the like right into the second act. Like, that starts, and he's like, wow, look at all this. And, like, he progresses, whereas Davey gets, like, 5 minutes of runtime.
Right. Like, there's no scene where Whitey introduces Davey to, you know, want and ignorance and tells Davey to, you know, beware of them as a metaphor for his own short-sightedness.
Even again,
you know?
Like, he has that moment of connection with Benjamin, and he fucking ruins it.
Exactly.
So
Let's move it at warp speed here because we are dragging ass.
All right, all right. Let me do this. So he's out at the skating rink with Eleanor and Whitey, and basically Whitey does an info dump on Davy's backstory where his parents die. Davey doesn't want to hear anything about it. He goes on a bender and then ends up breaking into the mall where the weirdest friggin' scene in this entire movie happens where all of the product placement comes to life.
Product placement was just like the pre for Adam Sandler. It was like before he knew that he'd go on vacations, like for grown-ups, he just did product placement.
Right.
And I found out that like they didn't even ask permission for any of this. So they didn't even make any money off of this scene.
What?
They just
what?
Did it. They just did it just because. Like, you idiots. You could have made some serious... You could have made your money back on this movie if you just asked Foot Locker for an endorsement deal. But nope, you just said like, you know, fuck, let's just do it.
All right, so we have the song that all of the product placement comes to life while Davey is broken into the mall to yell at Jennifer, even though she's not there because he's super drunk.
And also because she hasn't done anything because she's not even a character. She has no personality except that she's a single mom. Again,
she's a
shorthand.
Cutout. It's, So there's the song The Intervention, which is honestly kind of not super memorable, except for the fact that it reveals what's in the card that Davey saved.
And it's a lot of Adam Sandler yelling. And also, it's, again, we've got Tyra Banks in there as the Victoria's Secret dress. We've got Kevin Farley, the late Chris Farley's brother, as the Panda Express panda. Was Rob Schneider busy?
He was busy working on this little film called Eight Crazy Nights. He couldn't fit it into his schedule.
You've got the grandma from The Wedding Singer as the See's Candy grandma. So this is where all his friends show up. Carl Weathers.
It's
a surprisingly funny bit. Carl Weathers is funny in this scene.
Yeah,
the GNC model that keeps leering at the Tyra Banks Victoria's Secret gown.
It's a good little bit.
It's not bad.
So the cops find him and he pulls a basketball move to lock them up in a sex position and then runs away and gets on a bus to New York. The bus breaks down. Also, while this is all happening in the A plot or the B plot, depending on your opinion, Whitey and Eleanor are getting ready for the banquet, and it is revealed at the banquet that Whitey did not win, and a millionaire who donated a scoreboard ends up getting the 35th year patch.
A millionaire played by John Lovitz, so we can get him in here, too.
Correct.
John Lovitz with a hook hand, yes.
Sure, with a hook hand. Sure, why not?
Sure, why not? So that we can make the one gag where Adam Sandler's like, oh, I bet you wiped with that hand by accident before, and then John Lovitz goes,
yeah, I have.
It's super funny, you guys.
Again, trying to prevent us from feeling things during a big redemptive moment by making a joke. Anyways.
Right.
So Davey,
can I just pause you here and say like, this is where my favorite joke in the movie happens? Okay. And so Mayor Kevin Nealon is introducing, you know, the banquet and the night, and he starts off with a joke, and the joke is absolutely horrible and lazy and stupid. It's just a knock-knock joke where he says, you know, knock-knock, who's there? The joke is basically like, aren't you glad I didn't have time to write a real joke for this scene?
Yeah.
And then the entire banquet hall erupts into just like hysterical laughter for what feels like it 2 or 3 minutes of the movie.
It might be, and the deer are pooping themselves.
Like, the deer are pooping themselves with laughter. The Rob Schneider Chinese character is just beating his head into the table.
He's shirtless. Because... he also ripped his shirt off.
Yes. And then, like, the basketball coach is, like, doing that weird Russian dance thing, like, down the aisle, just out of sheer glee at Kevin Nealon's horrible joke. And, like, I wish the movie had been more like this. Like, it would take a scene that you've seen 100 times in every Christmas movie and just plays it for, like, the as much anti-humor as you possibly can.
And it comes back around to Jennifer and Benjamin. He's like, that joke wasn't that funny. And she's like, yeah, sometimes people laugh at things to make people feel better. And I feel like she should be looking at the audience.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are, let's say this about the third act. There are a number, for some reason, there are a number of good goofs in the third act. I don't know why. It's like they suddenly had a realization that they could write real jokes without being lazy and resorting to, like, hatred as the source of jokes or mean-spiritedness.
Like they realized they needed to land the ending or else the movie wouldn't work. So they only worked on the ending.
Yeah. So Davey, the bus breaks down outside of the lodge where the banquet is occurring, and Davey realizes that he needs to apologize to Whitey. He goes there, and the cops are looking for him, and the deer are there, and it has what I think, Libby and I both agree is the best joke in the movie. The deer form a pyramid to block their view of Davey, and the cop comes around, and the other cop asks him, is there anything over there?
And he's
like,
says, just nope. Deer making a pyramid.
Just some deer making a pyramid, and then turns around and walks away. It's very good, and it's...
And then the deer all fall down, because it's hard for deer to make a pyramid.
It was the one good chuckle that I had in the movie. It was pretty good. And then there's one other... So Davey breaks into the banquet after Whitey didn't get the patch, and there's another song where Davey is convincing the crowd that they've all been terrible to Whitey, and Whitey would... give the shirt off of his back literally to any of them at any time.
I forgot this song existed.
It's like they tried to do a song out of Fiddler on the Roof or something. I mean, as the big emotional point in this third act.
Yeah.
There's like a Spanish guitar. It's and there's choreography. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's a real... It's not
it
done
sure
well.
Is a real gut buster, I'll tell you that.
It's not done well for the style that it's done in, and
yeah.
Like it's really, especially because like he's trying to put too many words into a sentence. It's like, look, Elvis Costello, back it the fuck down.
Well that's kind of the Adam Sandler shtick. Like he's it's obviously the joke, but I think it's just Adam Sandler, so he, even if it's not funny, he's going to go for it anyway.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler.
Yep. So there's the one other, actually, I guess there's two good goofs left in the third act that I wanted to mention. One where the townspeople are still turning against Davey before he goes into the song. They're saying, let him have his peace and then we'll send him to jail. Send him up the river. And there's, inexplicably, there's a cowboy who's firing guns into the air. It's pretty good.
It's like this movie doesn't know whether it wants to be a cartoon or if it thinks it maybe should have just been a live action movie. Because every once in a while you get weird shit like that, and I appreciate it.
It remembers it's a cartoon for a minute, and I do appreciate those moments, yes.
Yeah.
So Davey convinces the townspeople, but at this point Whitey is already left with Eleanor, and they go to their comfort spot, which is the mall, which is closed down for the night, but it's unlocked, and they treat it like a chapel, which is, I think, is the other kind of interesting goof piece. I don't know if it's like a mall walkers thing or something, but it's cute in a way.
Yeah, it's very Whitey.
Eleanor's like, it's the most beautiful place on earth. It's a little funny.
Yeah, and especially because, like, because that's the thing with Whitey and to some extent with Eleanor, is those characters have been developed where you absolutely believe, like, of course they think the mall is the most beautiful place on Earth. And yeah. Whereas, like, nothing that Davey ever does, and especially, we'll talk about Jennifer at the end, ever feels like something, like, we've been on this character's journey with him. His motivations are never clear or feel real the way that, like, Whitey was really the only really developed character.
I was just about to say that. He's the only three-dimensional character in this entire movie.
So, not the Chinese restaurant owner, Favor Oppenheimer, not him.
Well, yeah,
that was going to be my guess.
He had a real arc in the second act, I thought.
And he gets the wig.
He realizes he looks good in a wig, and it's a real revelation for him. No.
All right. So well,
that actually let's go ahead and talk about Jennifer, because, like, she has a moment when Davey busts into the banquet and he starts singing this song and telling everybody how wrong they are, where she just says, like, oh, thank God, finally, like, Davey gets it.
Yeah.
And
he's shedding a tear.
Exactly.
She sees him crying and she says, finally.
But it's paying off like a subplot that we really never got, where she was just hoping that Davey would turn himself around and become like a normal, decent person again. And then when he sings this song and she goes, oh, finally, it's like, you were waiting for this?
Yeah, girl, you gotta have higher self-esteem than that. Come on. You just want to take Jennifer and be like, let me take you to Sephora. We'll go to the mall. I'm sure they have one in the product placement. And we'll get you a nice dress. We'll get you some nice makeup. You deserve better than Davey. Because it's like, really, like, of all the dudes, that's who you're gonna hold out hope for? Like, come on. And, like, I get it, it's sad, but, like, I got a lot of, you know, ex-boyfriends who are idiots, and I'm not, like, holding out hope that they'll become better people. I've moved on. So
yeah, like, I'm not waiting around for somebody that I used to know when I was 12.
Yeah.
You know?
And right. I get weirded out when, like, people find me, like, high school people, like, find me on Twitter, like, remember me? Like, not really. Mackenzie, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I do know who you are. But
We have mutual friends. It's weird.
Yeah. She's very much, because, again, she's not a real character. She's like a cardboard cutout. So her arc to him, like, let him speak. Like, why? I just don't understand why she would give a shit.
It's really bad, too, now that you mention it and now that I think about it, is that it's played up, especially in the next scene where all of the people come to the mall and throw the patches at Whitey. Is it Whitey or Eleanor that, like, puts their hands together at the end? It's Eleanor that puts their hands together. And it's kind of gross now that I think about it.
It's
is
super
that,
gross.
Jennifer is almost treated as, like, Davey's prize for becoming a little better of a person.
Yeah, to becoming a functional human being. Like, he's not a great...
Congratulations, you are emotionally carbon neutral. Here, have a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really what it feels like.
And I think we're supposed to be like, oh, yay, they got back together. But I'm just like, girl, run. He has not... Like, he's been sober less than 24 hours.
Well, no, if you think about it, because he had his bender broke into the mall and then went, he's still drunk.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, yeah, you're right. Like, no, do not go home with this dude. Do not.
It really feels like I understand that they do the finally thing, but, like, at the very end when the hands are put together and stuff like that, it feels like Jennifer has, like, no agency whatsoever in any of this, and she's just, like, standing there smiling. Okay,
it's like,
gee, it's almost like Adam Sandler wrote this movie.
Yeah,
God damn it. Yeah, no, the whole Jennifer thing, like, yeah, and again, like, watching it now, it just grossed me right the F out. Ugh.
Yeah. We should clarify, they're
not throwing patches at Whitey. They're throwing them to him. Like, it makes it sound real mean. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Here,
yeah.
Whitey, take your fucking patch, asshole.
The last scene in this movie is the whole town comes to the mall where Whitey has broken down, basically, and they award him the 35th patch, and then the previous patch recipients decide to give them their patches. Including, we didn't mention the weird, inexplicable three-boobed woman for some reason.
She's the, like, She's like the only other woman in the film. It's like Jennifer.
The hooker from Total Recall is in this film for some reason.
Like, why would you think that's a good, like, it's not funny.
So, it implies that at some point in the town's history, they decided, we're going to give this woman the award 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
For three very specific reasons. Nothing else happened in this town for 3 years except this woman having three knockers. It just made the front page news for three fucking years.
Well, I like to think she was like a philanthropist, but also she seems a little, she's got three babies suckling at her breast, so she had triplets. Maybe she was like a super basketball player before.
Maybe.
And like went to the Olympics and is now settled back in her hometown and teaches kids, I don't know, archery or something.
Yeah, but it's just weird because they introduce her in the last 15 minutes of the movie.
They mention her early on.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
They do, like, she gets a line in one of the songs, I think.
Was it the first song, probably?
Probably.
No, I think it's in the, yeah, I don't know where it is, but I remember thinking, like, all right, there's a woman with three bibs. Which is a very, like, Monty Python kind of joke. Like, a woman with nine legs. Like, it's anytime you think, like, okay, this movie's actually going to have a moment of sincerity, they're like, look, this chick has three tits!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I've sent my earlier comment about her being introduced in the last 15 minutes, but still.
She's basically introduced in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah. It's, yeah. So they all throw the patches to Whitey, and he's having a seizure of joy, I guess.
Well, yeah, well, there's that moment, like, again, they're all like, they have him up on their shoulders, and then there's the Jennifer moment, and then he's so happy, and the movie ends with him having a seizure, because we can't have anything nice. That is, like, the film's final message. You can't have anything nice. You can't have
joy. Yeah. A Looney Tunes circle closes in on him while he's having a seizure, and that is, like, literally the last moment we get in the film, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I don't know how to frame this next thing that I'm going to say, but depending on how you feel about Adam Sandler and the Hanukkah song, they make you wait 75 minutes to hear the fucking Hanukkah song, because that song only plays through the end credits.
One, thanks to Napster, we could have probably just downloaded it and didn't have to sit through this movie. Two, the Hanukkah song is amazing. It is always funny. It will be funny until the end of days. He could make one every year, and I would think it'd be the most hysterical thing in the world.
Let me just download it. Hanukkah song underscore Weird Al underscore dot exe. All right, this is it. This has got to be it. But I can't tell you how many songs were misattributed to Weird Al on Napster.
Oh God, yeah, that's like a thing.
Any parody song was a Weird Al song.
I should make a BuzzFeed listicle of songs that you thought were by Weird Al because of Napster.
Yeah, it's like any song with any hint of humor whatsoever was attributed to Weird Al at least once. And it was probably an executable or zip.
If you were 18 or 19 in the year 2005, you probably thought every funny song was either Weird Al or, I don't know,
Adam Sandler. Honestly, I'm sure there were a bunch that were misattributed to him as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so this song, this song is, I guess, what the movie is supposed to be based on.
Is the third version of it. So
it's the third. Yeah,
it's the reason for the movie.
For the movie. Yeah. Adam Sandler's Eight Crazy Nights is the reason for the season. But it has nothing to do with the movie, and the movie has nothing to do with the song.
Well, except
they bring out Rob Schneider in the end credits version of the song.
The movie.
And he does his little thing.
He says the words Eight Crazy Nights in the song.
But that's it!
That is literally it, and that's what I'm saying. That's why it's so tenuous.
So, if the movie were based on the song, do you think there would have been more famous people in the movie?
You would think, but maybe they didn't want to be a part of it.
They were probably with you.
Let's run down the list. No, let's not do that. But no, it's odd to me that Eight Crazy Nights the movie and Eight Crazy Nights the song are basically similar in name only.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're both about Hanukkah. That's about it.
That's true. I mean, okay, true. That's true. I'll give you that.
And they both feature Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
We have made the full Venn diagram of where these two things link up.
It's just a circle called Adam Sandler. So, okay, I guess the last thing is a dumb joke that I'm just going to make. So the movie's full title is Adam Sandler's Eight Crazy Nights, as though there were another Eight Crazy Nights.
Just so that we didn't get them confused.
Yeah. So I guess it leaves the door open for anyone else who wants to try to make a movie called Eight Crazy Nights, unless Adam Sandler copywrote that phrase.
Well, you two were joking about a sequel being made as a result of this podcast, so I guess it leaves the door open for Adam Sandler's Nine Crazy Nights.
I want to die.
I think it's more of a Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville situation, where it's... Just in case you didn't know that Adam Sandler was attached to the phrase Eight Crazy Nights, here is how we're going to brand it to remove any and all doubt whatsoever.
Yeah, but is he going to open a retirement community? Adam Sandler's Eventually. Eight Crazy Nights retirement community, like Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville retirement communities?
Eventually, I would imagine.
I can't believe there isn't a sequel to this, to be perfectly honest.
Really?
Yeah, I just kind of, because, huh. Well, because life is meaningless and everything is garbage.
It's 2018.
I can't believe there's not a sequel to Eight Crazy Nights.
Hmm.
I don't know how.
Yeah.
But I guess every day that we don't have a sequel to Eight Crazy Nights is really a beautiful day. I mean, like, the planet is going to overheat and we are all going to die in a nuclear holocaust. An orange lunatic sits in the White House, but we don't have a sequel to Eight Crazy Nights, so I guess everything's good.
Every day that we don't have an Eight Crazy Nights sequel is a gift from Ra, the sun god, and I will take every single one of them.
So, based on that reaction, should we move into the crankometer?
I suppose, yes. So the crankometer is our patented scale for rating Christmas movies based on an X and Y scatterplot axis, because we're a bunch of idiots here at Christmas Creeps. The X-axis is the Christmas scale, where we rate how Christmassy these films are, and the Y-axis is the quality scale, where we discuss and rate how good the films actually are. So, Libby and Brad, tell me, how Christmassy, on a scale of 0 to 5, is Eight Crazy Nights? And mind you, we will dip into the negatives. So,
well, it's how not particularly,
or should I say how holiday,
how Hanukkah-y,
Hanukkah-ish?
It's somewhat. It gives a lot of lip service to Hanukkah, so, but without really ever getting into actually celebrating it. They talk about it, but like, you never. At one point, they're like, "Will you show us how to light our menorah?" Like, why do you have a fucking menorah if you don't know how to light it? You should have learned by now.
Or just like, they're candles. You just light them.
Yeah, but I mean, there are prayers and everything.
Oh,
like,
no, I'm aware. Yeah.
Yeah, but the idea being like, they've had this menorah for how long and they never learned how to light it? Like, there's clearly other Jewish families in town enough to have a giant ice menorah. Why don't you ask the guys who lit that to light it for you? Since it's so important. It really makes me mad. But
also just like the way we sort of rate these things, really how it relates to the holidays in general, you could really set this film at kind of any other time of year.
Yeah.
I mean, Davey's depression is sort of made worse around Hanukkah because that's when his parents died, and that's.
But I have a feeling he's a scumbag 365 days a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only tenuous link, I would say.
But I mean, that is kind of a real phenomenon. Like depression does sort of get worse around the holidays for certain people, and that is like sort of a documented phenomenon. So Eight Crazy Nights at least sort of pays lip service to that idea, even though there's really no evidence that Davey is a piece of shit just around the holidays. He's a piece of shit, 24/7, 365. So sure, whatever. But this film really could have taken place at any other time of year, I think. And it would have kind of worked out exactly the same.
Yeah.
I mean, because most of this film was about basketball. So
and the mall.
And the mall.
Yeah, like that card could have easily been a birthday card.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And the Person of the Year award, it could have been given out whenever. It doesn't strike me as a thing that has to be done at the holidays. So Eight Crazy Nights, like, it pays, it pays lip service to the holidays, but it's really kind of... inconsequential.
Yeah, it really could have taken place at any time of the year, in all honesty.
So that said, I guess, what point value do we want to ascribe this? One? Like, just give it the barest minimum, the way it gives Bit Davy the barest minimum.
Well, is it 1 to 10? Scale 1 to 10?
It's negative 5 to positive 5.
1.
1?
I'm going to go okay. 0. It is a carbon neutral holiday.
But it has a giant ice moon.
Yeah, but it could have literally taken place any other time of the year.
But then you wouldn't have that giant ice menorah in this magical town that celebrates Hanukkah.
But it's just all set dressing.
This magical Gentile town that for some reason celebrates
fucking
Hanukkah.
Fucking loves Hanukkah. Just fucking loves it. Loves the shit.
Give me 8 crazy nights? Shit, we'll make it 24 crazy nights. You know, 31 nights of 8 crazy nights. Let's do it.
Oh, God.
Coming soon to Freeform.
Coming soon to Guantanamo Bay.
You know, it is 2002. That would have been appropriate. Jeez. Yeah, Brad, you convinced me. Let's make this a carbon neutral 0. Because, come on, it's Adam Sandler. That's my
I was
excuse.
Trying
Adam
to be
Sandler.
Nice. I was trying to get the holiday spirit.
You guys. That's not going to get you very far on this podcast.
That's what I say to your holiday spirit. A hearty... Excuse me, I'm sorry. I apologize for myself. But it's my show, and damn it, I'm going to say 0.
Okay.
So, the y-axis. Did any of us enjoy this film?
Yes. Fuck yes, okay. I did. I have such a weird soft spot for this film, and I don't want to. But I am, I think, and Joey podcasted me before, you know, I have trash. I have...
Oh, yeah.
I have such... Because the way I feel about films usually is directly tied with the circumstances under which I saw them. And so I have a weird soft spot in my heart for this terrible, terrible, terrible... Like, I know it's garbage. But I'm probably going to watch it next fucking Hanukkah. I thought about it. I was like, I wonder if my niece is old enough to watch this. Her bat mitzvah's coming up. And so... No, nobody
There's
should
a lot
watch
of,
this.
I don't know. Yeah, nobody should
They're
watch this. It's too xenophobic and too mean-spirited. Like, I don't get why they still put this on TV. Because, like, it's not that
it's... They put this on TV?
Yeah, like, I wasn't making a joke. Freeform has this on TV during its, like, holiday rotation, and I don't know why.
It must be one hell of a TV edit.
That's, I guess, my other question is, who is this movie for?
That is a good question, because it's definitely not for children.
But it's not R-rated, like, it's not...
It wants to be so for, badly.
But it never quite crosses into that territory. Like, it still tries to stay kind of family-friendly, like, with the kid and everything.
Yeah.
But it's not family friendly, but it's not, I guess, like, maybe freshman frat boys in college.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure who this, because it has, like, that family friendly sort of message about, like, I don't know.
The answer is it's for Adam Sandler fans who otherwise would never watch a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
I guess.
And as the years go on, that number is steadily dwindling down to 0.
Down to Libby, who watches it.
Down to, excuse
me,
down
and
to
Beth,
1.
Who?
Down to 2.
So.
3 now, because she's got enough. A baby.
For my part.
4, I guess.
I found myself frequently just embarrassed to watch this.
Oh, I was
film. So
embarrassed to watch this. I was really, I hated myself for laughing.
I mean, like, I can count on a single hand the times that I laughed, and most of them were just things that Whitey said because the Whitey voice got in my brain and it won't come out.
That kind of shooting makes me want to do the robot.
That was really good. Holy
that was
shit.
A very good Whitey. Let me say that.
Like I said, it's in my head and it won't leave.
But I'm like, that's a funny line. Like, I don't know. This movie is so bad, but again, like, I just kind of, I got a weird soft spot for it. No, I'm not going to front. I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm super cool. I don't like the movie.
There are things in this world known as problematic favorites. I think you're allowed to have this as a problematic favorite.
I wouldn't say it's I would say it's a favorite.
Okay,
it's
a problematic okay with it.
Yeah, it's like, occasionally, like, I'll let myself get, like, McDonald's, which I never, or Taco Bell, like, I do not eat fast food. But, like, every once in a while, like, I'll get a craving for Taco Bell, and I'll let, and eat, like, once in a while, I will let myself have it. Mm-hmm. That's what this movie is like.
Sometimes you just gotta feed the beast.
Yeah, that's what this movie is like, and, like, because, again, I probably haven't watched this I think I've watched this once since Ian bought it for me. And I don't even remember when that was. We've been together like 17 years. So that tells you that it is a very, it is a sometimes food.
Gotcha.
But I enjoyed watching. I was like, okay, this actually held up better than I thought it would, as opposed to like Batman Forever, which made me want to die.
Much like this movie made me want to die.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's trash.
If we have to ascribe a point value to it, I don't want to. I'm still gonna say
negative five. I'm gonna go negative. I mean, it's garbage. It's a garbage. Just because I enjoy it doesn't mean that it's.
I was gonna go with negative three, friends.
I'm gonna go right to negative five. It's fucking trash.
You know what? We'll split the difference, and I'll say negative four.
That's fine by me. I mean, it gets negative get minus two to whatever the score would have been for that awful Rob Schneider casting decision.
Yeah.
By default.
I mean, the things that I like about this movie are some of the animation's kind of nice, and some of the songs are good, but those could have been in literally any other movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler did more to damage this film than anybody else. So I'm gonna say a negative four.
Yeah. I'm just gonna go right. And all those nice things I said about it. Nope.
Right, still in the trash.
It's still terrible. Like, I can recognize that it's
so
terrible.
Libby, you would almost say that you would take any emotional investment that you were building up over the course of the film and throwing it away. Almost like
pretty
this
much.
Film.
Just kicking it right in the dick.
I think that settles it, folks. So, Christmas Creeps, crankometer score for Eight Crazy Nights is going to be a 0-4. Plot it out, and we'll move on to our next episode, which should be out, I believe, is going to be our Christmas episode.
Right.
So we're going to, look, Brad's not looking forward to it because he knows what's coming up next.
I can't wait to find out.
Well, I guess I can tease it a little bit. We like to do a thing here on Christmas Creeps. We haven't done it in a little while, called July at Christmas, where everybody celebrates Christmas in July. But you know what? It's Christmas time. We've been talking about Christmas all year, so we're going to flip the script a little bit.
What?
And do something super patriotic. Last year, we talked about Rocky IV, and this year, you'll just have to wait and see. It's a holiday secret.
So, I hope it's grown-ups. I hope it's super summery. I hope it hurts you.
Oh, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. But you'll have to come back in a couple of weeks. Come back for our Christmas special when you'll find out what we discuss on July at Christmas. So I guess we're going to wrap things up here for Christmas Creeps. We have talked for much longer than the actual runtime of the film, and I feel strange about that. I'm ashamed. I'm genuinely ashamed of myself. Like, we've done this maybe once or twice in the entire run of Christmas Creeps, and the fact that this film is so short did us no favors. I guess the last thing I'll say is we are a member of the Christmas Podcast Network. We are a coalition of like-minded holiday fanatics who decided to come together and share our podcasts with each other and the world to spread the holiday cheer far and wide. We are part of a 10-podcast crew. There are 9 other shows on the network. We've got Christmas Past, we've got Deck the Hallmark, we've got Tis the Podcast, Hallmark and Jess, Weird Christmas, Tinsel Tunes, Advent Calendar House, Can't Wait for Christmas, and It's a 90s Christmas Podcast. So there is a Christmas podcast on this network for just about every flavor of holiday fan. So go to ChristmasPodcastNetwork.com, check out one or two of the shows, or, you know, all of them if you feel like it. And subscribe away. So that's going to do it for this episode of Christmas Creeps. If you've got questions or comments or emails or anything like that, you can get at us. I'm just running through the gauntlet of promotional shit right now. tweet at us at Christmas Creeps, facebook.com/Christmas Creeps. We're there as well. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on YouTube. We're on Google Play. Go to any one of those sites, like, subscribe, rate, do all that fun stuff. Email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com if you want to give us a recommendation for a future show. We are starting to work up our schedule for next year. Not that we'll follow it, but we will try our best. That's going to do it for Christmas Creeps. So, Libby, thank you so much for joining us on this long, torturous death march of a podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for watching my favorite terrible Hanukkah movie.
Anytime, anytime. Also remember, we will be releasing the OST party. We'll be launching the week before Christmas, so stay tuned for that as
well. Please join us.
Yes. And also, as always, Brad, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Any parting words you'd like to leave the listeners with? I know I kind of rambled on for a while, but I'll leave the floor open to you.
Take care of yourselves. It's a wild and crazy world out there. Drink a glass of water. Wash, you know, take a foot bath. Treat yourself. You're worth it. Good night, everybody.
Happy
Christmas.
Good night, friends.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jess. And we're Hallmark and Jess. I feel like we're in a car dealership commercial.
We swear we won't talk like this during the podcast.
There's two things we love most in this world.
Hallmark movies and Lacey Chabert.
And we're breaking down all of your favorite Hallmark movies like...
A Very Merry Mix-Up.
Rocky Mountain Christmas.
And the All of My Heart series.
Tommy, please be my husband.
So tune in every Wednesday. Today!